Case number 09
dash case 50, committee. Go ahead.
Case number 09-5083. Enri DRC Inc., also known as Disaster Relief Construction Inc., petitioner. Mr. Wernick for the petitioner, Ms. Coles Huff for the respondent.
Good morning. My name is George Wenick for DRC, Inc. In 1957, the Supreme Court first approved appellate mandamus in the case of Labai versus Howe Leather based on the application of the All Writs Act and as an exception to the final judgment rule. Since then, federal courts have used appellate mandamus in more than a dozen situations, including the two that are before the court this morning, that is where a district court has ruled on a motion to transfer under 1404A, and where the court has ruled on a motion to transfer because of lack of personal jurisdiction. In 2004, the Supreme Court decided the Cheney case, in which it somewhat simplified the older rules concerning application of appellate mandamus, and said that there were three conditions that must be met. One is that there's no other adequate means to attain the relief desired. The second is that the right to the writ is clear and indisputable. And the third is that the writ is appropriate under the circumstances.
Which case is that?
That's the Cheney. It actually rose out of this,
what's
this circuit.
Where is that cited in your brief?
It's not, Your Honor.
That's what I was wondering.
But I mean, no matter Kerr is still the Supreme Court's decision on mandamus. There's nothing new in the law of mandamus. You still have to show an abuse of judicial authority. It's an extraordinary remedy. The burden on you is almost beyond description. It's so high.
I think that's a fair statement of the law, Your Honor.
It is.
It's not just that we have.
We don't grant mandamus. Anyone can file a mandamus petition. So there's nothing interesting about that proposition. Anybody can file mandamus.
Right.
What's interesting is whether or not we'll entertain it. And we have never, we have talked about the possibility of mandamus being filed and denial of transfers, but we don't grant them.
We haven't said we never grant.
Yes,
them,
I said we haven't granted it.
Yes, right. I think
there's no case.
This circuit has never granted a mandamus
good
and a
reason,
denial.
Because if you follow the Kerr standard, no one has been able to meet it. And if it's something akin to forum non convenes, it's understandable because it's a highly discretionary decision by a district court. And if there ever a set of cases in which we would not encourage parties to seek mandamus, it's cases in which the district court has great discretion.
Yes, and DRC understood that when it filed this petition and came to the conclusion that this was such a unusual case. I refer in the brief to the singular feature of this case. The singular feature of this case is that DRC, as its first pleading, moved to dismiss 12B6 plus 12B3 motions. That motion then was pending for 4 years. During which there was no activity. And I think it is a fair statement.
Mandamus will not undo that.
I understand.
That should not have happened. But the relief you're seeking here today is not relief for that harm.
Well, let me show you the nexus.
And there might have been.
I disagree, Your Honor.
Might have been mandamus relief for a long delay had you sought it. You didn't.
Yes, but I disagree that harm is unrelated to this petition. That harm is directly related because the trial judge said, I asked myself whether I could transfer this to another district, and the answer was I could not.
You said that among a number of things.
Yes, and
part of the standard for granting the transfer is that it be in the interest of justice, right?
Yes.
And given the deferential standard we apply in reviewing the denial, isn't that expression, I could not transfer this to another district, consistent with the standard of not being in the interest of justice?
No.
It's not?
It seems to me that he is addressing more of an administrative matter or perhaps embarrassment.
Now, that seems to you.
Or perhaps.
Fine, and you may be correct.
Or perhaps embarrassment. I will tell you that I was there and heard the judge say it, and it sounded like he was. In fact, he apologized to us.
Well, I apologize to you, too.
Well, I'm not asking for an apology.
That isn't the only thing he said.
No,
Nor is it the only possible.
But let's talk about the nexus between the time period and the ruling. One way to understand
with it. Well, why don't we talk about his basis for his decision? You see, you're trying to make mandamus review something akin to Cohen or normal 1291 review. You can't play that game.
Agreed.
You absolutely can't do what you now want to do. Your instinct is to say, okay, Your Honor, let's work through this case. That's not mandamus. You have to show us an extraordinary abuse of judicial authority. You can't meet that here.
Well, let me ask you just so I understand what your argument is. I thought your argument was that in this case, the district court did not apply the appropriate analysis but looked at factors that are irrelevant.
Improper. Yes,
and
there were typically two parts of the analysis.
He cited two district court cases where, in those cases, the district court had gone through what I'll call the Gilbert analysis. All right? And this court, I thought your argument was, did not do that, but simply said,
that's true.
We're keeping it. It's been 4 years. And that even though the government, in its opposition, went through the analysis, the district court didn't say, I'm adopting that analysis.
Yes. So there are two parts. And let me break up your question into those two parts. One is, he didn't apply the proper factors. What he said is that, oh, we have discretion. The plaintiff sued here. I'm going to deny it. That alone has justified mandamus in other circuits. The second.
Said we have discretion, and then he cited two cases, which indicates that clearly he was aware of the Gilbert factors.
But then he didn't apply them.
The analysis.
But then he didn't apply them.
And how do you know that?
Well, it seems to me.
You don't see it in writing?
No, I assume that the judge. It's incumbent upon a judge to explain his reasoning.
Did you ask for an explanation?
Well,
you're playing the wrong game. I'm sorry. I want you to understand, because I want to be fair to you. If you have an answer, I want to hear it. You're playing the wrong game in mandamus. What you're trying to do is talk about the nature of review that you would be entitled to after you've gone through and gotten a final order from the district court. You can't play the game you want to play on mandamus. I can't find any case in this circuit, and I can't find anything in the Supreme Court that allows you to do what you're trying to do. I understand what you're trying to do, and it might be an interesting argument on appeal, but it's just like forum non convenes, where parties say, it's outrageous that we had to go through that whole trial. He should have dismissed. The only way they can raise those questions is after the case is over.
You're
in the same situation.
Let me offer you another perspective, if I may. In the Scott case, where this court did grant mandamus, where the transfer was ordered by the judge, this court said that we don't have enough understanding of what the judge's reasons are.
Right.
And then you held on to jurisdiction and you asked for the court's reasons.
You and I know there's a difference between transferring out.
No question. Okay. There's no question.
There's a whole line of authority where you can work that through. It's an entirely different situation.
It's a different situation. But we did cite two cases in our brief where courts have issued mandamus directing the transfer. One is the Volkswagen case, which is an en banc decision of the Fifth Circuit just last year. So it's not that it's not done.
Not done in this circuit.
I understand it has not yet.
It's not yet been done.
But we're more faithful to what the Supreme Court has told appellate courts to do. We follow the rules. I don't know what the other circuits are doing, because I've read the Supreme Court cases, and mandamus is an extraordinary remedy.
Right.
We don't even allow much on collateral review.
Let me give you a one-sentence statement of why I think this is extraordinary, because I haven't quite finished the sentence.
Go ahead.
And that is that the judge took 4 years to rule on our motion and then used the four-year interval as the basis for the motion.
Well, let me ask you about that. If you look at what the district court said in his first ruling, all right, this is tab 8, he goes through a number of factors in talking about personal jurisdiction.
He does.
All right. And then he says, given my findings in connection with personal jurisdiction, there's venue. And then he says, and this is bottom of five, page five, going on to six. He says, this case could have been brought in Alabama, but deference is due to the plaintiff's choice of forum, and 1404A transfer is a matter of discretion.
Right.
Citing those two cases I referenced. Mm-hmm.
But not at least presenting his analysis, if he did any analysis.
Well, what I'm getting at is the way I read the district court's first opinion, he does an analysis for personal jurisdiction. He uses that as the basis for finding venue. Right. And then, in effect, he's using that same analysis in connection with his transfer decision.
But isn't that error?
Well, why? I mean, if the district court...
You ask a question. You don't get to ask questions.
That's a rhetorical.
You don't understand the role of the parties here.
Thank you. That was a rhetorical question.
Okay.
What I meant to say is that Roger's
question was not rhetorical.
That is, in fact, error. That is error to say simply because there is personal jurisdiction, that therefore it's a convenient forum. Those are two separate analyses.
Error doesn't get you mandamus.
No, that doesn't. The reason this was filed is that to use a four-year interval for which the court is responsible and for which the court apologized as the basis for denying the motion
is the sole basis.
He said it was the overriding basis. I use the term overriding. If you accept...
Did he use the word overriding?
He did not. But he said, I couldn't do that.
It's overriding, but...
And why did I use that? Why did I characterize it that way?
In the order that Judge Rogers just referenced, he does refer to the deference owed to the plaintiff's choice of venue, which is a proper element.
That is a proper element.
And he cites two cases to do the analysis, so...
And as Judge Rogers said, he had given his analysis on venue and personal jurisdiction, which would be among the things you would consider in a transfer request.
Right.
Well, I guess that's where I think I disagree with Your Honor, because...
You wouldn't consider venue and personal jurisdiction?
You wouldn't even reach the question if you didn't have venue. The transfers are always raised after the venue has been established.
You're right, I understand.
That's my only observation.
Consider those things, though.
Well, yes, because if he had found lack, we also raised that he didn't have.
What I'm saying is he exercised his discretion appropriately. You may be right that he erred, but that's not mandamus.
Well, no, I take him at his word when he says that I asked myself if I could do this and I couldn't. And that sounds like an overriding reason.
Well, you know what it sounds like to me anyway as a judge? It sounds like, now I've gone through all the rest, and then in addition, you know, If I'm on the balance, it's my discretion, I'm not going to send this somewhere else. We need to do it here. It's appropriately here. I'm not transferring it. And when you're talking about an abuse of discretion standard, that is a perfectly appropriate thing for a district court judge to decide.
That's,
you may hate it, but it's not inappropriate.
It's not what the judge said, though.
At the very least, it's not clearly erroneous,
right,
is it? And it has to be, this is mandamus. You have to have, the judge has to be clearly incorrect for you to prevail.
Yes, it's bad. The question is it bad enough?
Right.
And
well, I don't know that it's bad.
I understand.
But
that's
I know
our contention.
The standards you have to meet, and I don't see how you're meeting that standard.
It's sort of a catch-22, which I think is sort of per se offends people's sense of justice when you use a four-year interval as an overriding factor. And the judge said that's,
counsel,
I couldn't
do it. There wasn't anything the judge could do about that four-year interval. And I'm not sure why you think it's an improper factor anyway.
See, the irony...
Because that starts the delay over if you move it back to another district. So why isn't it consistent with the interest of justice, which is a factor under in the transfer analysis, to consider that four-year interval? You assume that's a bad thing for the judge to... And I know this doesn't matter to you, but it isn't the same judge, of course, who occasioned the 4 years. But why wasn't that a proper factor to consider in the interest of justice analysis?
And the irony is that you sat on potential rights in never protesting, ironically, through mandamus, that your case hadn't moved.
I consider mandamus to be an extraordinary remedy.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah, right, yeah, right, exactly.
Well said, Jeff. Well said. Yeah, your time is up, and we've talked you well past your time, and that we do that to people. Do we need to hear this one?
Not.
Do we need to hear this one? Yeah, I think we have your position from the brief, counsel, so unless my colleagues have further questions, the case will be submitted.
Thank
you. Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.